This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. COVID vaccines are available to everyone 12 and older now. The CDC just signed off on the FDA's emergency use authorization of Pfizer's vaccine for 12 to 15-year-olds. And some of them are wasting no time, like 12-year-old Brady Bond, who got vaccinated at the Long Beach Convention Center just today.
I'm definitely excited to go to like different movie theaters again, start hanging out with friends, and being able to do more activities like going to theme parks.
KCRW's Kaylee Wells has been covering the vaccine rollout, and she joins us now from Long Beach, from the convention center, where some of the first young teenagers in LA County are set to get vaccinated, and they're all gathered there. Hi, Kaylee.
Hey, Steve.
What does it look like there right now?
Well, there's plenty of people. I'm told this is actually a lot more people than there have been recently. There's already a line snaking outside the door. That doesn't even include the main line of people who never leave their cars anyway. And of course, there's plenty of kids here. One indicator of how much busier it is, the appointments here at the convention center are actually double what they were 1 week ago. And this is just day one of that 12 to 15-year-old group. So hopefully good news for vaccination rates on the horizon.
We heard from young Brady just a moment ago. What about the kids? I mean, how do they feel about being allowed to get the shot?
Surprisingly, all of them seem really excited. I mean, when I was 12, my top priority was avoiding needles at all costs.
Yeah.
But when I spoke with one girl, her name is Penelope, she's in seventh grade, she echoed what I'm hearing from a lot of kids, that if I can get back to school and see my friends, it is worth it.
I want to take it because I want to be able to go back to school and I'm moving, so I kind of want it in that situation. But I don't like needles. I really don't like needles. It's two needles. And so I'm really nervous about that part. But I have to take it because it's beneficial. It's long-term. It's short-term pain for long-terms of happiness or whatever.
I also spoke to a boy named Vander who's 12. His appointment's not actually until tomorrow morning. And he told me that he's looking forward to anything that brings back normal school again.
It's really important to me because to have complete, complete confidence in immunity almost is like a superpower. You're good. And, you know, for a while, everyone's been worrying about this and understandably so. So to have a vaccine, it takes away all those worries.
And obviously, we have to say Penelope and Vander, because they're underage, their parents have to be on board, too. And they are just as excited. Vander's dad wants him to be fully vaccinated before he goes off to summer camp. Penelope's mom, Valerie Krause, has summer plans for her family, too.
This is like so petty and not a real reason, but I saw that the Dodgers have a special seating area for vaccinated people. And if you're not vaccinated, you have to show proof of a negative COVID test. So I'm vaccinated, my husband's vaccinated, and my daughter Scarlett, who's back in elementary school, she gets tested every week. So she has that test. So I'm like, oh, if Penelope gets, because she doesn't get tested because she's not back in school. So I'm like, oh, when she gets vaccinated, we're going to rock those Dodgers vaccination seats.
So the parents are excited, Kaylee, for sure, which isn't surprising since kids need the parental permission to get a shot. I mean, what about parents who are worried, though? You know, on the flip side, worried about how quickly that this vaccine came about.
Yeah, and these parents that I spoke to said that they do have friends who are in that boat. The biggest reason that they're just worried that the vaccine became available really quickly, just like we heard with the 16 and older version. Obviously, these parents are excited, but one of the biggest reasons that we're hearing for why people might be hesitant, kids just aren't as likely to get sick and die from this disease. It's not impossible, and they could still pass it on to someone with a higher risk, but still, it just kind of makes it seem like the stakes aren't as high. So that's why sometimes you're seeing parents get vaccinated and maybe they're holding off with their kids.
How, if you know, Kaylee, how were the vaccine trials for these kids different from the adult trials? What do we know?
I was surprised to find it's actually the exact same process. So I spoke with Dr. Ernie Guzman. He's a pediatrician and an infectious disease specialist, and he actually broke it down pretty well.
Everything that was done to study this vaccine is identical in time and breadth and depth as any of the other vaccines that we use routinely today. What they did is they compressed all the regulatory elements, everything, the science part, was the same. It's just the paperwork part was really kind of pushed together. And that makes this vaccine as safe as any of the other vaccines that we've studied.
And part of that paperwork process that he's talking about is having to search for trial volunteers. In this one, everyone's clamoring to be in the trial, so you don't really have to worry about that. Also, another thing worth mentioning, all of these vaccines are in emergency use authorization, which means we haven't finished that long 2-year trial to get the full FDA approval. But Dr. Pia Panaraj, another infectious disease specialist I spoke to, said even still, it's completely safe.
Over 90, 95% of adverse events occur within the first 6 to 8 weeks. And so we've already reached that period for all of the vaccines that studied in adults and in this 12 to 15-year-old cohort.
And then once they continue those long-term follow-ups, they will all probably apply for that full FDA approval.
What makes this vaccine different from what the adults are getting? I mean, is this the same thing, the two shots, Pfizer?
It really is the same thing. In the trials, they ended up settling on the same vaccine and even the same dosage. Typically, first trials are just adults only. And so this one had to get started later, but otherwise the shot's exactly the same.
All right. KCRW's Kaylee Wells joining us from the Long Beach Convention Center today. Obviously a big day for a lot of kids, 12 to 15, and for their parents, too, trying to get back to normal. And we should say this is on the heels of today's CDC announcement, right, about the fact that if you do get the shots, if you are fully vaccinated, you can scrap the masks inside and outside and the social distancing stuff, too. I mean, it's a major announcement today with that as well.
Yeah, I got to say, Steve, as a fully vaccinated person myself, I was so excited to see that news. It really feels like we're actually getting closer to our new normal.
Yeah. Kaylee, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
All right, onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Next week, the latest season of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills premieres.
Orphans and widows. It makes you feel sick. Did you know any of this?
No one knows the answer but him.
That was Housewives star Erica Jayne, or as you may also know her, Erica Girardi, soon to be ex-wife of famed legal titan Tom Girardi, the him she was talking about. Girardi for decades was known across the state for winning lawsuits. Lawsuits, by the way, for the little guys. He also became a fixture on the L.A. social scene, attending lavish parties, flying on private jets, flaunting the wealth on the Bravo TV show. But most recently, he's been in the news for cheating people, cheating colleagues, abandoning clients, seducing, as it were, the state bar. That's the headline in the L.A. Times investigation from reporters Harriet Ryan and Matt Hamilton. And they both join me now to, as Bravo's Andy Cohen would say, to spill the tea. Harriet, Matt, welcome to you both.
Hey.
Thank you, Steve.
Harriet, you know, some folks may have heard of Tom Girardi because of his involvement in the now famed Aaron Brockovich, PG&E, Hinckley case. And he won national fame, obviously, when the film came out, right?
You know, that's a good question. I think that he was famous in California and among plaintiff's attorneys already because he'd had a bunch of very large judgments and settlements with, you know, toxic polluters and personal injury cases and everything else. But I think he used the fact of Aaron Brockovich to kind of push himself more into the general public's knowledge. And definitely with his wife, you know, when she was on Housewives, should constantly, you know, drop the name Aaron Brockovich and as a way to introduce her husband's place in the universe. Oh, he's the lawyer from Aaron Brockovich.
And that's the positive aspect of this story. There's a lot of negative that we're going to get to now. And Matt, your investigation as well, both of you investigated this. Obviously, this is a very long saga. found that he and his firm were sued at least 45 times for legal malpractice and misappropriation of money, client money. But his reputation, particularly with the state bar, even through that, remained intact. As you say in the story, pristine. How did he manage to do that?
That's a good question. You are right. He was sued. He and his law firm were sued dozens of times by disgruntled clients, who complained that they were either getting shoddy legal work done for them or that they weren't getting the full amount of the settlement that they were initially promised or told they would receive, and instead receiving, you know, chunks of payments over time, which are very unusual for attorneys to, you know, disperse a settlement in phases like that. So how he managed to keep a clean record with the state bar, he, for one thing, he cultivated really close relationships with the bar. He had a very close relationship with a bar investigator named Tom Layton, who's a former sheriff's deputy. And he also had cultivated close ties with one of the more recent executive directors, former state senator Joe Dunn. And he, you know, when you are so involved in the bar, either serving in a leadership capacity or he was a former trustee of the bar, you know, the bar is conflicted from really investigating you. So a lot of complaints that went in about Girardi would have been diverted to an outside private attorney to investigate. So that's one way that Girardi was able to avoid scrutiny of the agency.
And relationships are very important, Matt, for sure. Harriet, another part of the importance, I guess, is the connection and how he was able to wield legal or political influence was through, these lavish parties that he was having, right? Or even conventions that he was having in Las Vegas.
Well, I mean, he had a private plane, too. He had ownership stakes in. And so he just rolled at a level that even among very wealthy attorneys was sort of jaw-dropping. So the consumer lawyers of LA, which, you know, the plaintiffs bar, they go to Las Vegas around Labor Day every year and they have this huge convention. And, you know, it's a Vegas convention. So it's over the top to begin with. But Girardi's party was sort of every year was sort of the pinnacle of this. And he would have, it was kind of like, you know, some aspects of a really nice bar mitzvah, like dancers and like musical acts. And he would have celebrities show up and perform, Jay Leno, and I think the band, some of the members of Styx one year, Leanne Rimes. And everyone wanted an invitation to this party. And I mean, lots of judges from LA Superior were invited and would show up every year. These are people that are going to be involved in, you know, handling cases that Mr. Girardi and his firm were pressing in their courtrooms. And they would show up at this party that he underwrote. It's kind of stunning to me.
I wonder, Harriet, how, you know, the fact that he was on, or at least his wife, Erica Jane, was on the show. And then the fact that, you know, he was such a high profile guy and that Erica and Tom were getting divorced. How did the confluence, I guess, of all of that lead into this investigation? And by the way, how did we not know any of this for so long?
That's a good question. Matt and I both have background as court reporters, and I've covered cases that Girardi Case did, that Mr. Girardi did. And he was an enormous force. If you would have told Harriet Ryan, who was covering his trial in 2005, see this guy? People are going to be accusing him of running a Ponzi scheme. I would have been very surprised. He just commanded so much respect. So I think there people didn't question him. And I've talked to people who say that they were owed millions in legal fees from him, like, you know, respected attorneys in town who did cases with him, and he cheated them, they say, out of their share of legal fees. And you know what they did about it? Nothing. Tell me about it 10 years later. Because they didn't want to get in a brawl with somebody who had so much respect in the community. And they thought it was better just to eat it and move along. And everybody kind of picked their breaking point. So his son-in-law, who'd worked with him for decades, left last summer. A bunch of attorneys left in September when he had a debtor's exam where he announced that he was out of money. But the whole thing stopped, you know, everything stopped the first week in December. The phone stopped being answered. You know, there were paychecks were not going out anymore, that sort of thing. So some people will say that it was because of COVID, because he couldn't settle any cases because trials weren't, you know, proceeding. But it was just, you know, little by little, and then it was all of a sudden. And it was just gone by like the first week in December.
I know, Matt, that the state bar has taken disciplinary actions. They did that in March. But that seems to pale in comparison to some of the other things that could come down the pike, right? Like legal proceedings, perhaps even criminal proceedings, right?
Yes, there is the bankruptcy proceeding that will really shine a whole spotlight on the Girardi Keyes law firm and Tom Girardi's financial affairs. There is questions of whether Tom may have hidden assets with his wife, Erica Jane. So the bankruptcy trustees are each trying to have lawyers appointed to pore over Erica Girardi's properties and assets to see if she's harboring funds that she shouldn't have. And then in Chicago, a federal judge has made a referral to the U.S. Attorney's Office there for criminal investigation over what exactly happened to the money that Boeing had wired to Tom Girardi's law firm that was meant for these widows and orphans, but which they never received. So there could be a potential criminal prosecution arising from that investigation.
I mean, this is like one big onion, right? I mean, you just peel and peel and peel. There's so much here.
It is. And the Tom Girardi onion may be rotten and we don't need it anymore, but how many other Tom Girardis are out there practicing law today? And can we count on our state regulators to make sure that they're not taking advantage of members of the public? I think this case asks a lot of really important and scary questions.
I want to thank you both. It is so much. Harriet Ryan, Matt Hamilton, investigative reporters for the LA Times. Harriet, Matt, thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us, Steve.
We're back with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Los Angeles has long been a mecca for healthy vegan eating. Think green juice and black bean burgers. They feel quintessentially Californian. Well, now plant-based restaurants run the gamut of international cuisine and ethnic eateries as well. Think Thai, Japanese, Italian, Mexican. The dishes are culturally diverse. They're packed with flavor. And vegan chefs are continuing to reinvent. Mona Holmes is a reporter for Eater LA. She's back on Greater LA as a contributor after a recent hiatus. Hey, Mona, welcome back to you.
I'm very happy to be back, Steve.
We're glad to have you back, Mona. Before we tackle LA's vegan options, I do want to talk a little bit about your decision to take a step back from KCRW for a few months. What went into that decision, and talk about why you did come back?
As a contributor, I've had the most amazing experiences. I have completely enjoyed collaborating with the team that actually works on my segments. I've enjoyed being feeling very much like a family over there. But as a contributor, I'm not in the office or studio as often as full-timers might be. But when I learned about the accusations of a hostile workplace earlier this year, I believed them. And it was a very specific familiar hurt. So I wanted to take a step back and see how the station would handle it. And I knew that as a contributor, I had a little bit more space to ask questions, express my concerns, and give some space to develop some trust again. And over the last few months, I've received so many answers about what's been going on since. And I've seen and heard about the things that are happening. And I have so much faith in KCRW's initiatives and current direction. And I believe that listeners will hear and feel the changes and growth. And yeah, there's a lot more to be done, but I'm really satisfied and happy with the start of the station that I care very much about.
Yeah, I mean, and to that end, Mona, I mean, we here at the radio station have made a commitment to continue to build a radio station that truly represents the tapestry that is Los Angeles, and to be more cognizant of the things that we cover and the places where we do that coverage. We've hired an outside company, for example, to help us identify the things that we can do better with regards to the diversity of our staff, to the sourcing of our reporting, even the makeup of the people we're talking to. There's always room for improvement there. And I think it's of vital importance that we do that. It's a commitment that you can see and that you can hear in our work. I hear it in our work as well. I work with so many great reporters, so many folks who want to cover this wonderfully diverse city. And you can read about that, by the way, and what we're doing at kcrw.com/DEI.
Well, one more thing, Steve. I missed you and my greater LA crew.
Oh my gosh, I've missed you so much. Here you are again, doing what you do. And that is today, talking about vegan food and vegan chefs, right? And the ingredients that go into their cooking. Would you say sustainability is at the core of their mission?
I'd say that sustainability absolutely is a focus of their mission. Just about every single vegan chef or restaurant owner that I speak to talks very openly about reducing their footprint. And also they are very vocal about the impact of consuming as many animals as we do. And like the owner of Jackfruit Cafe, Angela Means Kaya, who tells me that she constantly thinks about waste and uses items like compostable utensils, bowls, things that cost a little bit more, but it's because she considers this as part of her entire business plan. She calls herself a mindful capitalist. And just a note, she is also the former actress and comedian who played Felicia in the movie Friday.
And we're talking about your list of the 15 essential vegan restaurants in LA, from Santa Monica to El Monte to Long Beach to downtown. So give us a couple.
Well, let's try to picture driving down the 5 to downtown Fullerton, which is a super charming part of Southern California. And you're turning onto a street called Commonwealth Avenue. And you would see on the left-hand side a place called Chicana Vegana. And it's owned by a woman named Jasmine Hernandez. And I am a huge fan of her food. Even though we've got a ton of plant-based Mexican restaurants in LA that are outstanding, like Sena Vegan or Leonora's in the San Fernando Valley. But I found something so special with Jasmine's restaurant. Everything is delicious, but the sopes, a dish that I've eaten for decades, was so good with this base of fried masa or corn flour. And it's usually topped with pork or chicken, but Justine uses jackfruit carnitas with shredded cabbage, with crema and cheese that has no animal products in it. It's so good. But then there's Michelle Lee's Korean pop-up called Sung. She is an LA-based visual artist who had no cooking experience until she launched this sit-down vegan Korean tasting menu from her Lincoln Heights apartment in 2019. But her dish is so LA, you know, because like Korean food, fried chicken is, you know, like all these very quintessentially LA things that we talk about when we're talking about restaurants in LA.
Yeah,
she decided to flip it a little bit with fried mushrooms and kimchi waffles. So like a chicken and waffles kind of deal. It's so good. And if you look at her Instagram, you'll see how gorgeous everything is. But that one was definitely one of my favorites.
We've talked a lot on this program, Mona, you and I, about restaurants and volunteer groups who rose up to deliver free meals, especially during the pandemic, which, you know, strapped everybody. Restaurants were squeezed so hard. But a lot of people really rose up to help those in need during the pandemic. Has the vegan community done the same?
They have. It's been amazing to watch Maggie Baird, who is the mother of Billie Eilish and Phineas, to launch this organization called Support and Feed in LA. I spoke with one of their coordinators last week about how it's expanded to 4 cities. And the initiative is simply to feed people who are food insecure while supporting plant-based restaurants who experienced a slowdown of business during COVID. And I am really inspired by what they've done, in addition to being a huge fan of her kids, to support people within the city of LA as well as business owners is something truly remarkable.
Mona Holmes, reporter for Eater LA, contributor to Greater LA. Thank you, Mona. Welcome back to you. Much love.
Thank you, Steve.
That's it for this evening. Music venues next week and how they were pulverized during the pandemic. They're waiting for government help and know that they'll be the last to reopen. Will many of them even survive? Among the programs next week on Greater LA. Also, the people who have restaurants on Pico Boulevard. reflect the spirit of Governor Pio Pico himself, the man for whom the boulevard is named? And will a cashless society that's been accelerated by the pandemic leave so many people behind? You're going to hear that too next week. First, I want to remind you about KCRW's Drive to the Future, where in these very much changing times, your support goes beyond public radio. During the drive, a portion of your contribution supports KCRW's community partners, and we're talking about housing and education and public health particularly this week, giving a portion of our proceeds and attention to that cause and the important work that Kedron Community Health Center is doing in South Los Angeles. So when you support KCRW this evening, part of your contribution will help Kedron provide the community with mental and primary health care. Go to kcrw.com/give. And again, a bit of that kicks in, too, to Kedron when you give to KCRW. Once again, kcrw.com/give. And wherever you are in greater L.A., know that you are an important part of our mission. Thank you for your support of KCRW. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Rebecca Mooney, Sonia Geis, P.J. Shahamat, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Mario Saavedra, Phil Richards, Sue Margulies, Mike Vogel, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on the show this evening. I'm Steve Chiotakis, thanking you for your ears and for your time. Have a great night.